Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to our viewers here in the United States and around the world. I'm Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room. The Justice Department has announced the sweeping investigation of the Minneapolis Police Department and its practices, including whether it engages in a pattern or practice of unconstitutional or unlawful policing. This comes less than 24 hours after former officer Derek Chauvin was convicted of murdering George Floyd. Tonight, Chauvin, for his own security, is being held in an isolated prison unit as he awaits sentencing 8 weeks from now. He faces up to 40 years. We're also following developments in Columbus, Ohio, where there are now growing questions about the deadly police shooting of 16-year-old African-American Micaiah Bryant. Police are releasing more body camera video that appears to show Bryant wielding a knife and officers warning her several times to get down before she seems to lunge at another girl and police open fire. We'll have more on that story coming up later this hour. But first, let's go to our senior national correspondent, Sarah Seidner. Sarah, what's the latest where you are in Minneapolis in the wake of the Chauvin verdict, and where do things go from here?
Look, things are going to change around here. If the Department of Justice does find that there is a pattern and practice of misconduct with the Minneapolis Police Department, as you mentioned, a sweeping probe into the department and how it functions with the citizens here, it is a huge development here in Minneapolis. We should also talk about the fact that the department has already responded and said that they are going to pledge their cooperation with the DOJ investigation. I want to remind you that the head of the department, Madera Arredondo, sued the department several years ago before he was ever chief because of some of the practices against black officers in the department and won a settlement along with several other officers. So he is well familiar with some of the ways things work inside of the department and says he has been trying to change behaviors in the department as well. So you hear the police department is cooperating. The city council here in Minneapolis says that this is a good thing, that they do want this probe and they want to see what happens with the results of the probe. There are also folks in this community that for years have been asking for this. They've been asking for the DOJ to step in and look at what's happening at this department and others. Let me let you hear from the Minnesota Justice Coalition founder.
This case is significant in the sense that it brought the reality of what black and brown people face into the living rooms of America. This is the same thing that happened when the march happened over to Edmund Pettus Bridge, when the reality of what black people were facing was brought into the living rooms of America, and that spawned a litany of legislation. And the same thing needs to happen with this as well.
Now, he was talking about this case, referring to the Derek Chauvin case, in which he was convicted now of three different counts, two of them murder in the killing of George Floyd. And we should also tell you that Derek Chauvin is remanded to prison. We saw that happen in court live. He is also now, though, being separated from other prisoners. He is being kept in a secure and safe place because of the high profile nature of the case and also because he is a former police officer and everyone is going to know his story. They are trying to keep him safe. We know that we are going to have sentencing in the next several weeks. Wolf?
Have we heard, Sarah, anything from the 12 jurors who delivered those unanimous guilty verdicts?
We have not yet heard from the jurors. It will be up to the judge exactly when we get the names of those jurors. Those names will be made public. The judge initially said when this was all starting that he would pretty quickly after the verdict put those out. But because of the nature of this case, because people around the world have watched this case, he may change his mind and take a bit longer to put those names out. But once the names are out, maybe we will hear from one of the jurors, all the jurors, none of the jurors. That is all a wait and see at this point.
All right, Sarah, stand by. Let's bring in I want to get some more on the Justice Department investigation, first of all, of the Minneapolis policing practices. Our chief White House correspondent, Caitlin Collins, is joining us. Caitlin, the White House says President Biden will discuss police reform when he addresses a joint session of Congress next week. What's the latest?
Yeah, Wolf, they say that's a sign of just how important this is to the president and how he doesn't want to slip from the forefront. So he will be mentioning it during that first address to Congress. That's expected to happen next week. But that is going to happen as the Justice Department is making its own moves tonight with this new investigation that Sarah was just talking about. And, Wolf, we should make sure to be clear that this is separate from that investigation into whether or not Derek Chauvin violated George Floyd's civil rights. This is another Justice Department investigation. This is going to be into the police department where Derek Chauvin worked and, of course, was later fired.
The Justice Department launching a new investigation following Derek Chauvin's guilty verdict.
Yesterday's verdict in the state criminal trial does not address potentially systemic policing issues.
Attorney General Merrick Garland announcing a probe into the practices of the Minneapolis Police Department that employed and later fired Chauvin.
I am announcing that the Justice Department has opened a civil investigation. I strongly believe that good officers do not want to work in systems that allow bad practices.
Investigators will look into whether the department engages in the use of excessive force, discriminatory conduct, or unlawful treatment of those with behavioral issues. The Justice Department will issue a public report if the investigation finds the police department violated the law.
Building trust between community and law enforcement will take time and effort by all of us.
But federal investigations can take months or even years, and the White House wants Congress to step in now.
The President and I will continue to urge the Senate to pass this legislation.
It shouldn't take a whole year to get this done.
The police reform bill, named after George Floyd, passed the House in March, but faces an uphill battle in the Senate.
We will not rest until the Senate passes strong legislation to end the systemic bias in law enforcement.
The Floyd bill would ban chokeholds, create a national police misconduct registry, mandate the use of deadly force as a last resort, and end qualified immunity. It's that last part that has divided lawmakers, with Republicans arguing police officers shouldn't be stripped of the shield that can protect them from lawsuits.
I don't think, though, that the answer is to get rid of, in a categorical way, to get rid of sovereign immunity for our police officers. I think their job is hard enough.
Another heated confrontation on Capitol Hill. Representative Val Demings shouting down Congressman Jim Jordan after she criticized a Republican amendment for a COVID-19 hate crimes bill.
You know, it's interesting to see my colleagues on the other side of the aisle support the police when it is politically convenient to do so.
The amendment would prevent efforts to defund the police, which Demings called irrelevant since the bill doesn't propose that.
Law enforcement officers risk their lives every day. They deserve better, and the American people deserve. I have the floor, Mr. Jordan.
Lady has
what? Did I strike
the
a nerve?
The general,
law enforcement the general, officers the deserve lady, better than to be utilized as pawns.
Quite an exchange there, Wolf. But back to the Justice Department, we should note that Vanita Gupta has now been confirmed as the Associate Attorney General. She barely got across the finish line, but she did so with the help of Senator Lisa Murkowski, who crossed party lines to vote for her and saved the vice president from having to cast that first tie-breaking vote to get her confirmed. And in this position, we should note she is the first civil rights lawyer and woman of color to have this number three job at the Justice Department. But also, she is going to be overseeing the Civil Rights Division. And of course, Wolf, that is the division that President Biden wants to look into systemic racism.
Yeah, 51-49 vote. Caitlin, thank you very, very much. Let's get some more on all of this. CNN legal analyst Elliot Williams is joining us. Our political commentator, the lawyer Bakari Sellers, is with us. And CNN senior national correspondent Sarah Seidner is back with us as well. Bakari, Derek Chauvin now faces sentencing, is expected to be sentenced in about 8 weeks or so. What is the judge take into consideration here, especially since the sentence for each of these three charges is served concurrently, not necessarily back to back?
Well, first, thank you, Wolf, for bringing that point up. I think a lot of Americans are going to learn the difference in sentencing between concurrently and consecutively. There are a lot of people who are hoping and wishing that there is a sentence that they believe matches the crime, which is an extensive, long sentence, you know, where people spend the rest of their lives in prison. That's not going to happen in this case. In fact, this judge is going to be governed by the sentencing guidelines that are set forth. Those sentencing guidelines take into account what people have done prior to their arrest, their criminal history, which is hugely important, the nature of the crime, the facts and circumstances, et cetera. And so I think when you look at his guidelines, I'm not one to prognosticate per se, because those are just guidelines. The judge can go above those guidelines or below those guidelines. But I do think that most of the individuals who saw that video, most of the individuals who were relieved that he was found guilty of murder, will find some level of disappointment in the sentence that's going to be handed down due to the guidelines and his criminal history.
It's now up to the judge. Is there any chance, Elliot, that Chauvin potentially could successfully appeal this conviction?
Of course, there's always a chance that one can successfully appeal a conviction. And if you notice, toward the end of the trial, his lawyers started making a number of objections, preserving the right to appeal them. So, for instance, this whole question of publicity around the trial and whether it tainted the jury, that Chauvin was unable to get a fair trial because of the amount of publicity. And virtually every major objection that they raised during the trial will be the kind of thing you'll see on appeal. Finally, the big one is this third-degree murder conviction. Right now, the Minnesota Supreme Court is weighing in the case of Mohammed Noor, another police officer who was recently convicted of third-degree murder, whether and how officers can even be convicted of that charge. There's some specific wording in the statute that makes it a little bit more legally complicated. So you'll see a few appeals. It's his right, and it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. You know, Bakari, what does the Chauvin verdict mean for the three other police officers who was there on the scene with Chauvin involved? And they'll be going to trial, we're told, in August.
Well, if I was their lawyer, it would mean two words, you know, plea deal. I think you saw what the appetite was. You saw what type of case Derek Chauvin was able to put up. One that was not successful, one that didn't appear to have many resources, one that was flailing by all accounts at best. It's really very difficult to defend the indefensible. And although these individuals may view their role as being bit actors, I think that the jury, I think that the prosecution and Keith Ellison's office, and I think that the world view them as individuals who contributed to, aided and abetted a man dying. And so I think that they will. This is a word that lawyers oftentimes tell their clients. I think they'll be looking to be placed in the best possible situation, which is to take a plea deal and go sit down for a period of time.
Yeah, try to get some sort of reduced sentence if you just plead guilty. Sarah, a CNN analysis shows there was a drop in Minneapolis police use of force immediately after George Floyd's death, but force is still used disproportionately on black people. Does that reflect what you've been hearing from the community?
100%. I mean, the folks in the community have been saying this for a very long time. And it is something that isn't just a problem in Minneapolis, and they want that to be clear. They really feel quite strongly that this DOJ investigation should span more police departments, not just Minneapolis. And they realize that the reason why, one of the reasons why the DOJ is looking at Minneapolis is because of what happened with George Floyd. But there are a lot of folks in and around Minneapolis as well. You can name the city where people feel that this should be a larger investigation. But can I speak quickly to the point of what the other officers may be thinking and their lawyers? I spoke with one of the lawyers for one of the officers, Thomas Lane's lawyer. Now, I didn't speak to him after the verdict, but in the weeks leading up to this, I had a quick conversation with him. And if you look at some of his filings, he is one officer where, you know, I don't know if they're going to take a plea deal. We will see. Because he asked twice while George Floyd was in the prone position on his stomach with his hands, you know, handcuffed behind his back and Chauvin's knee on his neck, he asked twice, shouldn't we turn him over? And you can hear that on the audio and see it on the video, the body cam video. And he sort of mentioned excited delirium. He sounded like, you know, maybe we should turn him over. I know he was not in a senior position, Chauvin was, but he did ask a couple of times, and that's been a point that's been brought up in the court filing. So it will be very interesting to see how those three cases, three separate cases, play out.
Yeah, there's a while to go between now and August, as we know. Guys, thank you very, very much. Coming up, police release more body camera video amid growing questions about the deadly shooting of a 16-year-old African-American girl in Columbus, Ohio. Plus, experts say the U.S. will soon reach a vaccine tipping point with supply outpacing demand. We're following new reaction to the Derek Chauvin murder conviction and what it means for the future of policing here in the United States. For more on that, we're joined by Democratic Congresswoman Karen Bass of California. She's a co-author of the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. Congresswoman, thanks so much for joining us. I know you say this verdict could help get police reform over the finish line in the U.S. Senate. You've been working on this with Republican Senator Tim Scott. Where do things stand? Where do the talks stand right now?
Well, we're still in informal talks. There's no formal negotiations that have begun, but I just have to tell you that all of us exhaled when we heard that verdict, and the energy that is there, it's the type of momentum and positive momentum that I think will help get us over the finish line. If the verdict had been another way, it's no telling what we would be talking about right now, but it certainly wouldn't be positive. So I was just on the floor talking to my Republican colleagues. They're energized. And we need to stick with it. And our next step is to begin formal talks, which I hope will begin soon.
Senator Scott says Democrats are, in his word, receptive to a compromise on what's called qualified immunity, which protects police officers from civil lawsuits. Is it enough for you that police departments could be sued, but not necessarily individual police officers?
Well, you know, I think it's important that we examine it. But what's most important to me is that police officers have to be held accountable. And qualified immunity and Section 242, which is lowering the standard to prosecute officers, which is why they're so rarely prosecuted, those are real key components to the bill. And we have to make sure that that's there. That's why Derek Chauvin felt so cavalier about torturing George Floyd to death.
President Biden will address this issue. It's a very important issue when he speaks before a joint session of Congress next week. But can any police reform pass in the Senate? Not talking about the House, in the Senate with the filibuster in place. Can you get 10 Republicans to join all 50 Democrats? That's what you will need.
Well, absolutely, we will. And I think with the leadership of Tim Scott and Cory Booker, I think the stage is set for us to do that. We've had very fruitful conversations. I know that Senator Scott is an honest broker. He is serious about getting something done, and he's also committed to working with his colleagues and bringing those Republican votes. I can't bring the Republican senators along, but I do have confidence that if they will follow Tim Scott's lead, that we will be able to get the votes we need in the Senate.
Yeah, clearly he might be able to do it among his Republican colleagues. I'll be speaking, by the way, in the next hour with George Floyd's brother, Filonis. He says it's time for the Senate to do its part, his words, and pass the bill named after his brother. Do you think Congress will be able to deliver by the anniversary of George Floyd's death next month?
I think we have to. I don't think there's any reason for us not to put a bill on President Biden's death by that time. We have been talking about this now. It will be a year. So there's no reason for us not to act. And that's why the momentum from this verdict and frankly, the positive, peaceful protests have been helpful in contributing to that momentum.
What was it like when you and your colleagues heard the verdict yesterday? Take us into that room. I know it was an emotional moment for you.
Well, it was a particularly emotional moment for me because I had the flashback to 1992 and Rodney King. And there I was devastated at the verdict. And yesterday I was just renewed. Relieved. But I will tell you, though, that it was a great verdict from my point of view. But the verdict is step one. Now we need to have a sentence that is the maximum sentence. You know, we won't really be able to relax until that happens, because the few times we've seen people convicted, we also have seen judges turn around and give them a slap on the wrist. And he just cannot do that this time. He has to have the maximum sentence. The world watched that crime take place. And that is the only thing that will be an example of justice.
Yeah, that maximum sentence could be up to 40 years. We'll see what happens when he's sentenced in about 8 weeks or so from now. Before I let you go, one final question, Congresswoman. Your Democratic colleague, Maxine Waters, she, as you well know, all of us know, she had urged protesters to get more, her word, confrontational if Derek Chauvin was acquitted. Are you concerned she may have inadvertently actually given Chauvin a leg up in a possible appeal?
I can't see how that could possibly be an appeal point. And what we saw after the verdict were peaceful, positive protests. And not protests, it was really more of a celebration. So I think that would be an incredible stretch to say that's why there should be an appeal. The jury was sequestered, so I don't know what that would have to do with the verdict that they came to.
Congresswoman Karen Bass, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Up next, we're going to have a live update from Columbus, Ohio, where police have just released body camera footage after an officer fatally shot a black teenager wielding a knife. Tonight, grief and anger in Columbus, Ohio, after an officer fatally shot a black teenage girl who appeared to be holding a knife during a fight with two other young women. We're just getting some new body camera video in from the police, which could shed some new light on the situation. We want to warn our viewers that the footage you're about to see is very graphic. CNN's Jason Carroll reports.
Hey. What's going on? Hey, what's going on? Hey, 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 get down, get down, get down, get down.
It all happened in seconds. A police officer opens fire, shooting and killing 16-year-old Micaiah Bryant. The chaotic moments before the shooting captured by the officer's body camera.
She had a knife.
Tonight, the city of Columbus releasing the two 911 calls placed Tuesday afternoon.
Ma'am, you need to talk to me.
We got these grown girls over here trying to fight us, trying to stab us, trying to put our hands on our grandma. Get here now.
City officials also released extended body camera footage from the officer who shot Brian, Columbus police identified as Nicholas Reardon, along with body camera footage from two other officers at the scene. As seen on the body camera video, when the officer arrives, he quickly gets out of his patrol car and runs toward a group in the driveway of a home. That's when one teenager moves toward another person, appearing to push her to the ground. Reardon can be heard shouting to get down, and that's when the girl appears to lunge at another female in pink. The officer shouts to get down several times, then fires his gun. Four shots can be heard on the tape.
No, you ain't shoot my baby! You shot my baby!
Police released this slowdown version of the body camera footage as well. It shows what appears to be a knife in Micaiah's hand as she raises it above her head toward the person wearing pink as the officer then begins shooting. After the shooting, the female in pink, who Brian appears to lunge towards, spoke to officers.
That's what the police
did. That lady on the floor?
She came after me.
With a knife?
Yeah, so he got her.
We don't yet have all of the facts, but we do know that a 16-year-old girl, child in this community, tragically died last night. This is a failure on part of our community. Some are guilty, but all of us are responsible.
Franklin County Children's Services says Micaiah was in foster care in the county. Her mother, Paula Bryant, spoke to TV station WBNS.
She was a very loving, peaceful little girl. She promoted peace.
Say her name!
Micaiah Bryant!
Say her name!
Micaiah Bryant!
Protesters took to the streets in Columbus Tuesday night to voice their outrage. The shooting happened just 30 minutes before Minnesota police officer Derek Chauvin was found guilty on all three counts against him in the killing of George Floyd. And, Wolf, there have been a lot of questions about whether or not the officer in question, Officer Nicholas Reardon, whether or not he could have used a taser rather than a gun. Police were asked about that late this afternoon, and police made it very clear. According to their policy, an officer can use deadly force if that officer is trying to stop an assault from occurring. Of course, this will all be part of an independent investigation that is taking place. That officer in question has been taken off street duty and pending the outcome of that investigation.
Wolf.
All right, Jason, thank you. Jason Carroll reporting. Let's get some analysis from former Missouri State Highway Patrol Captain Ron Johnson. Captain Johnson, thanks so much for joining us. As you heard, the mayor of Columbus says this officer, quote, took action to protect another young girl in our community, direct quote. What did this officer have to weigh in these kinds of circumstances?
Well, he's weighing serious injury or death that could occur to another. And so that's what he's looking at. And then he's going through his mind, his different force continuum levels that he can use in this situation.
As you know, there are folks saying that this fatal shooting was actually disproportionate. But the police chief says generally, and I want you to confirm this, officers are trained to respond to deadly force with deadly force. Is that the case here?
Policy gives you that authority to do that. I wouldn't say that happens in all cases. Sometimes officers can use different methods that are appropriate, and it just depends on the situation and how things are analyzed in the heat of the moment by the officer.
We can see in the video that this 16-year-old girl, Micaiah Bryant, did have a knife, but it doesn't change the fact that she was a 16-year-old girl and she's dead. Was there any opportunity here, do you believe, potentially to use a taser or some other way to de-escalate this situation?
And that would be hard to say from this vantage point and seeing the videos. The thing that I would caution is that we're pretty quick sometimes as chiefs and leaders to say that it was authorized. I think we should just say, hey, that we're in the investigation phase, and let's let all the facts come together. I think when we say it so quick, I think because there's a distrust in our communities, then we think that you're too quick to clear the officer involved.
Captain Johnson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Just ahead, experts warn supply of the COVID vaccine could soon outpace demand here in the United States. What will it mean in the quest for what's called herd immunity? And later, mass arrests in Russia as anti-Putin demonstrators are taking to the streets. We'll go there. We'll have a live update from Moscow. Tonight, President Biden is touting 200 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine that have been given here in the United States since he took office. That's double the number the president initially promised would be administered in his first 100 days in office. CNN's Nick Watt has the latest from Los Angeles.
Today, we did it. Today, we hit 200 million shots. And the 92nd day in office.
And in just a couple of weeks, vaccine supply may outstrip demand in the U.S., so says a just published report. That is both good news.
Some experts say that the rapid vaccination effort has already saved tens of thousands of American lives.
And it's bad news. Just over a quarter of Americans are now fully vaccinated. That needs to maybe triple to reach herd immunity. Could be close. Only 61% of adults said they'd had or want the shots, although that poll is a month old.
Obviously, there is an element of vaccine hesitancy or concern that we need to address.
I'm calling on every employer, large and small, in every state, to give employees the time off they need with pay to get vaccinated. The IRS is posting instructions for how employers can get reimbursed for the cost.
South Dakota just joined a handful of others banning state or local government from mandating vaccine passports to prove inoculation.
Anybody wants to come into my business, I would never ask them those questions. I think everybody has their own rights, and we want to keep our rights.
And the actual virus, red is bad, means case counts are climbing, and there's not much red on that map right now. Still, on average, nearly 64,000 new cases are reported every day.
We all need to mask up until the number of cases goes down.
And the rest of the world really matters. Last week, globally, the most cases ever recorded in a week, says the WHO. And just look at that line in India. Cases and deaths are soaring. I'll end on some better news. There's a lot of talk about how well these vaccines actually work out there in the wild. And a study just in from Rockefeller University in New York, 417 employees were fully vaccinated. And after vaccination,
only two of them then caught COVID-19, these so-called breakthrough infections. That is a very, very low, very, very good number.
Yeah, these vaccinations are so, so important. Nick Watt in L.A., thank you very much. Let's get some more on the latest pandemic developments. Our chief medical correspondent, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, is with us. Sanjay, you heard President Biden celebrate 200 million doses of the coronavirus vaccine given under his administration. So where does that put us in terms of overall vaccine strategy?
Well, we're going pretty fast here, Wolf. I mean, you know, obviously there is these targets that we want to get to, but it took 2 months to get to 100 million doses administered. It took another month to get to another 100 million. So let me show you the age breakdown here. This shouldn't surprise you as you look at these numbers, but overall, you're seeing older Americans getting vaccinated at a faster rate. So if you're over 65, about 60% of people have had both shots and 80% at least one shot. Over the next month, you know, you'll see those numbers creep up, obviously, even more. As you go further and further down, that's where a lot of the attention is going to need to be focused in the, you know, over the rest of the spring and the summer to make sure younger people and then maybe even kids, Wolf, as you know, those trials for kids we'll see some results there, too. That should happen over the summer as well, Wolf.
This milestone, Sanjay, comes as a survey shows we're approaching a tipping point where vaccine supply will outpace the demand for these shots. What can be done to fix that problem?
Yeah, I think we're sort of, you know, maybe already there in some parts of the country. It's not going to happen in the entire country at once. I found this poll. I want to show you this poll, Wolf. I found this really interesting, looking at the willingness for people to get vaccinated. And, you know, I don't know if you can make that out, but the black line basically are people who've already gotten it, 61%. We just sort of gave you those numbers. The bottom line is people who say only if required, and that's about 7%. And then definitely not, about 13%. But it's that blue line that's in the middle, that's going down. You see that one across the middle of the graph there. 17% of people say they will wait and see. They're kind of the movable middle in all this. So people who, you know, they're not saying definitively no, but they haven't been anxious to get in line either. If they can get on board and you get all 17% roughly there, then you're starting to get closer to, you know, 75-80% of the country vaccinated. That would be really important. There's obviously people who say only if required, and it'll be required, I mean, in terms of getting to herd immunity, maybe not mandates necessarily, but that's sort of how it breaks down. I found that blue line particularly interesting. Wait and see. That's been coming down, but it's about 17% now.
Yeah, these folks have to be convinced to go ahead and get the shot. And Dr. Fauci always says you need 70-85% of the population fully vaccinated in order to reach that herd immunity. Meanwhile, Sanjay, new studies are showing some promising results in terms of breakthrough coronavirus infections in fully vaccinated people. These are people who are fully vaccinated but might still get COVID. What does this data tell you?
Well, you keep in mind, I'll show you the data. Keep in mind as you're looking at this that the initial trials, what they were really trying to figure out is how good are the vaccines at preventing you from getting sick? Open question a little bit has been, you know, how well are they doing at preventing you from getting infected? It made sense that you'd think it would do a good job in preventing you from getting infected as well, but how well? So, you know, they looked at the Chicago nursing homes. I think it was close to 650 people, and they basically tracked them over time. Show the numbers, but basically, you know, 71% not at the point that 71% were not vaccinated. You of the people who had breakthrough infections, 71% were not vaccinated. People who were fully vaccinated, you had breakthrough of about 4%. So it was about 22 people out of 650 or so people who were vaccinated that actually had a breakthrough infection. So I hope that makes sense. I'm not sure I explained that perfectly well. The point is that if you were fully vaccinated, it tremendously reduced your likelihood of becoming infected. And that's good news. I mean, this is the real-world data that we've been sort of waiting for. It's one example. Nick Watt just talked about a different example where they showed similar sorts of results. We've seen this in Israel. We've seen this in other countries around the world. So it appears increasingly, you know, good news, Wolf, that the vaccine not only prevents you from getting ill, which was really good news, but also does a really good job, not 100%, but a really good job of preventing you from getting infected also.
Yeah, and not only that, but it's most importantly, even if you do get infected, prevents you from getting very sick, God forbid, hospitalized or dying. That's really, really significant. Right. That's why these shots are so important. Dr. Gupta, thanks so much for joining us. Coming up, more than 1,000 people have now been arrested in Russia as they protest the imprisonment of the opposition leader, Alexei Navalny. Plus, we're getting new details of how Derek Chauvin is being held in custody as he awaits sentencing for the murder of George Floyd. We're following a very tense situation in Russia right now where security forces have detained more than 1,000 demonstrators protesting the imprisonment of the opposition leader, Alexei Navalny. Our senior international correspondent, Fred Pleitgen, is on the ground for us in Moscow. He's joining us live. So, Fred, what are you seeing? What's the latest?
Hi there, Wolf. Well, there were certainly mass demonstrations that happened not only here in Moscow, but in dozens of cities, really, all across Russia, and a lot of security forces that were out here on the streets. And just in Moscow alone, we saw tens of thousands of people marching right here in the city center. I'm right very close to Red Square, which was completely cordoned off with security forces. And the people who were demonstrating here, they were calling Vladimir Putin a killer. They were calling for Alexei Navalny to be released. And first and foremost, they were calling for Alexei Navalny to be allowed to see his own doctors. Because we know, Wolf, of course, that Alexei Navalny has been on an extended hunger strike there in captivity, that his organization says that his health is very frail, and that they say that he needs to be able to see doctors that he trusts, and that so far that simply isn't the case. Now, there were some pretty ugly scenes, Wolf, that happened in Russia's second city, in St. Petersburg. We saw some reports of the police beating some of the protesters there. Also, if you look at the picture, I actually just got some updated numbers. It's now almost 1,500 protesters, apparently, that were arrested just today, and the bulk of them also happened in St. Petersburg. So really a very different picture happening there. But once again, the protesters calling for Alexei Navalny's release, and first and foremost calling for him to be able to see his doctors. And you could clearly see the security forces here in this country remaining very defiant, Vladimir Putin remaining very defiant. The protesters also saying they're not going to go away anytime soon, Wolf.
Fred, the U.S. is warning Russia, both publicly and privately, that Russia will be held accountable if Navalny dies. How is Putin responding to that?
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously saying that no one's going to tell him what to do. It's quite interesting because, of course, the protesters didn't choose this date just at random. It's a very important date here in Russia. It's the State of the Nation address, the annual one that Vladimir Putin gives. And there he made very clear that he's not going to listen to any sort of other countries. He said that there are clear red lines for Russia, as he put it, red lines that are defined by Russia, and that he would not tolerate other countries crossing those red lines. And he said that Russia would strike back in an asymmetrical and a very tough manner, as he put it. And it was quite interesting in that speech, because he made those remarks right before speaking about Russia's new nuclear weapons capabilities and showing off some of the big weapons, of course, that we've been talking about that the Russians have been developing. So clear warning, obviously, to the U.S. and the other countries not to get involved in Russian affairs, and also obviously clearly stating that Vladimir Putin, at least as far as Alexei Navalny is concerned, certainly isn't willing to listen to any other countries. Wolf. Yeah,
obviously a very, very sensitive and potentially explosive moment unfolding right now. Fred Pleitgen in Moscow, thank you very much. Coming up, we have details of the sweeping new federal investigation of the Minneapolis Police Department in the wake of former police officer Derek Chauvin's conviction in the murder of George Floyd.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.